welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, an update on the ongoing crisis in Haiti. What forces are involved in the chaos? Who are the so-named leaders of the opposition being put forward by mainstream media? What role is CARICOM, the Caribbean heads of state, playing in the crisis? What does the U.S. historic and present day involvement in Haiti have to do with what's happening on the ground right now? Who are the so-named gangs? What's behind them? Our guests are Jeb Sprague, a research associate at the University of California, Riverside, and author of Globalizing the Caribbean, Political Economy, Social Change, and the Transnational Capitalist Class. Also, we're joined by Pierre Laboisier, who hails from the south of Haiti and is a co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Christina Onnestad. Israeli forces withdrew from Gaza's main hospital after a two-week raid, saying it killed 200 militants, confiscated arms, and detained hundreds. Israel's military spokesman Daniel Hagari said Hamas and the smaller Islamic Jihad group had established their main northern headquarters inside the hospital. Claims Hamas has refuted. Reports are coming out among those killed in Al-Shifa Hospital were a journalist and nearly two dozen patients, according to the World Health Organization. The Washington Post is reporting the Biden administration has silently approved another package of arms to Israel of some 2,000 bombs. Among those bombed in recent days are civilians, a tent being used by media outside the Al-Aqsa Hospital. At least four are dead, according to the WHO. It's the latest bombing in central Gaza. Ramped up strikes, including the bombing of a home, killed a family of five that locals say had no connection to militant groups. Rami Almigari reports.
Mustafa Musa is a relative of Kamal, a retired English teacher with an UNRWA-run schools. Kamal was killed along with his five family members during a heavy air raid on his Megazi one-story building.
We in Megazi have been informed that the home of our cousin teacher, Kamal, was raided, and we rushed here to check on them. What should we think? We really wonder, why were they hit? Our cousin and his sons have never been perceived as people who had anything to do with the resistance at all.
In the same Megazi refugee camp, Israeli army warned other residential homes before Israeli warplanes dropped bombs on them. Adnan Masleh is an owner of a three-story home in Megazi. His home was pounded to rubble shortly after he received a warning by phone from Israeli army.
A million question marks as to why my home in particular was hit. All the people around came over to me and wondered, saying, "You, Abu Khalad, have never had anything to do with anything." Meanwhile, they target other homes without pre-warnings.
For Pacifica Radio, I am Rami Almighari in Gaza.
Tens of thousands of Israelis are protesting in Jerusalem, demanding Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu resign and there be new elections and the government expedite hostage releases in Hamas captivity. Protest today outside Parliament is considered the largest anti-government demonstration since the country went to war in October. Dissent is growing over Netanyahu's handling of Hamas's attack in southern Israel, as more than 100 Israeli hostages remain in captivity, and he's rebuffed Hamas's deal for a prisoner exchange that includes an end to the war. House Speaker Mike Johnson says he will put Ukraine funding bill up for a vote when Congress returns next week. The pushback within the House GOP was swift. Alex Gonzalez reports.
Nebraska Republican Congressman Don Bacon told Meet the Press That could cost Johnson his job.
But we have some people that if they don't get 100%, they want to bring the house down, and it makes us dysfunctional. And so that's a possibility.
Georgia Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene filed a motion to remove the speaker after Johnson worked with Democrats to pass a spending package and to avoid a government shutdown. The House will also take that up after returning. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
Officials say the U.S. Coast Guard is preparing a temporary alternate channel for essential commercial vessels near the collapsed Francis Scott Key Bridge in Baltimore. Crews have begun the complicated work of removing steel and concrete at the site of the bridge's deadly collapse. After a freighter collision last week, four construction workers remain submerged in the river below. Meanwhile, right-wing conservatives are attacking Democrats and Baltimore's black mayor in the wake of the bridge collapse, blaming DEI, Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion initiatives. Catherine Carley reports.
Republican New Jersey Congressman Jeff Van Drew says Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg worries more about pronouns than the safety of America's infrastructure. Since the collapse of the Francis Scott Key Bridge, right-wing comments have linked the accident to diversity programs, immigration, even COVID lockdowns. Baltimore natives like TV producer David Chase have reacted to that with rage, calling it an insult to politicize the tragedy. Safety officials are investigating if contaminated fuel is what actually caused the cargo ship to lose power before it crashed. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
California's new minimum wage law for fast food workers goes in effect today. Most fast food workers are set to be paid at least $20 an hour. Mass shootings over the Easter weekend in Georgia, Illinois, Indiana, and Tennessee. According to the Gun Violence Archives, there's been 94 mass shootings in the U.S. so far this year, 9 mass murders with guns. Chicago filed the first of its kind lawsuit against Glock, the nation's top handgun maker, last week. Alex Gonzalez reports.
13 state attorneys general have also signaled they're looking at the issue. Alaa Lefkowitz, with Everytown Law, says the suit aims to make Glock stop using a design that's easy and cheap to convert to fully automatic, like a machine gun.
We know for a fact that over 1,000 modified Glocks have been recovered on the streets of Chicago in 2 years. That is 1,000 machine guns that are being used in crimes. I mean, that's just unacceptable.
The ATF reports that more than 5,000 machine gun conversion parts were seized between 2017 to 2021, 5 times as many as in the prior period. I'm Alex Gonzalez for Pacifica Network and Public News Service.
I'm Christina Onnested, reporting for Pacifica Radio.
Okay, those were our news headlines. And this is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. And we'll be spending the hour giving you an update on Haiti, getting the truth of what's behind the chaos on the ground. Many of you now, there are increasing press reports from Washington Post. The capital of Port-au-Prince basically is in shutdown. The airport is closed. The ports have been attacked. The so-named illegal, I should say, Prime Minister of Haiti is Ariel Henry, is not in the country. He has been trying to get back into Haiti from reports, but basically he's stuck in Puerto Rico. Also, most recently, Benin in West Africa agreed to send 1,000 police officers, and a few CARICOM countries in the Caribbean region also had committed to this. So Ariel Henry, after meeting with CARICOM, where according to CARICOM, they were pressing Henry it's a little unclear what CARICOM exactly was doing. We're hearing different stories. One story is that they were pressing Henry to resign, which has very much been a demand of the movement on the ground in Haiti for Ariel Henry to go. He didn't agree with that, so there was a compromise that was proposed. Meanwhile, wasn't consensus on Ariel Henry or his political party being part of any transitional government. So there you have it. What we're going to do before we welcome our first guest, Pierre Laboisier, we're going to go now to a clip from the chair of CARICOM. This is a statement that was given just recently on Saturday, March the 9th. Let's go to that clip.
In working with the various stakeholders in Haiti to bring stability and normalcy back to the people of Haiti and the country of Haiti, the heads of government of the Caribbean community remain engaged in deep discussions with the various stakeholders in Haiti and Prime Minister Henry. Whilst we are making considerable progress, the stakeholders are not yet where they need to be. We are acutely aware of the urgent need for consensus to be reached. We have impressed on the respective parties that time is not on their side in agreeing to the way forward. From our reports, the situation on the ground remains dire and is of serious concern to us. At the same time, we have taken the decision as a community to write the heads of state and heads of government of the key countries with whom Haiti is engaged as partners, inviting them to meet with our heads in CARICOM in Kingston, Jamaica, on Monday, the 11th of March, to urgently address this state of affairs and all other matters critical to the stabilization of security and the provision of urgent humanitarian aid to the people of Haiti. It is vital that this engagement be at a highest level as possible to send a clear message of unity between CARICOM and the national community as we work together to provide the critical support to the Haitian people at this time of crisis for them. We'd like the Haitian people to know that we'll continue to work with them on their behalf until there is a satisfactory resolution that brings stability and relief to them. I want to also take this opportunity to thank all our heads in CARICOM, the foreign ministers, international stakeholders and partners for the tireless efforts, the numerous hours, the unconditional support and time that they're dedicating to this process. We will continue to do as much as we can to the best of our ability, dedicating the time and resources in the interests of the Haitian people and Haiti, remembering that a resolution and solution for Haiti must be by the people, must be led by the people, must be owned by the people of Haiti. This continues to be the greatest priority of heads at this time. Thank you.
Okay, and that was a clip then giving the view of CARICOM. This was this past Saturday. And now there is breaking news. ABC News is reporting that U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken did meet today with, did meet on Monday with Caribbean leaders in Jamaica. You know, he was invited. Apparently, it was a closed door meeting that did not include Henri. It's a little unclear, though, who from Haiti, because we know that the airport is closed. So we have no idea that if Haitians were involved in this meeting with CARICOM and with Antony Blinken, the United States, it was also reported that Canada and France were going to be part of that meeting. And meanwhile, Mia Motley, who is the Prime Minister of Barbados, is quoted by saying that up to 90% of proposals that Haitian stakeholders have put on the table are similar. Of course, several civil society collaboration of political parties, Montana Group, et cetera, had created a way forward for Haiti. They had created this years ago, but it was blocked by the United States. So the Barbados Prime Minister is now saying that up to 90% of the proposals are similar and that they include an urgent need to create a presidential council to help identify a new prime minister to establish a new government. So Pierre Labossière, I'd like to welcome you, Pierre Labossière, who hails from the south of Haiti. He is a co-founder of the Haiti Action Committee, and he is nationally and internationally known, and including on the ground, for his human rights work to bring democracy back to Haiti. Pierre Labossière, welcome back.
Thank you very much, Margaret. Really appreciate being on your show. Thanks.
Right. And Pierre, we had to go through quite a bit to kind of give our listeners an update, as we had not covered Haiti in a while. But I'd like you right now, you just heard about the meeting that happened on Monday. We'll be learning a bit more, I'm sure, about that meeting. But Pierre, describe to our listeners, we're hearing a lot about the chaos on the ground, the violence on the ground, and the gangs, so-named gangs that have basically taken over Port-au-Prince as well as other parts of Haiti. Pierre, who are these gangs? Friend. Who are these gangs?
Yes. To start from the a little bit earlier, I have to go back to the coup d'etat of 2004. And this is when the United States, France, and Canada, they met in early 2003, I believe January 2003, they met in Canada to plot the overthrow of the democratically elected president Jean-Bertrand Aristide and his administration.
Yeah, Pierre, yes. Give me a minute. Now, Jeb Sprague, who is on the call with us, he's written an article all about that coup, a secret cable CIA orchestrated Haiti's 2004 coup. So we're going to get, I kind of did it a little bit in reverse. We'll be discussing the coup in more detail and the role that the United States and the CIA played in that coup. But Pierre, I have heard you say that what is happening now on the ground is a continuation of that coup, really, in 2004. It's like an ongoing coup. And these so-named gangs are, somebody's behind all this, Pierre.
Precisely. And that's why I had started with that, with the coup, because that's when we when the UN came in, the troops of the United Nations, along with the US, France, and Canada, they started, there was very much collusion between a number of so-called gangs that were being paid by members of the elite, the ruling elite that had financed the coup and worked with the US to organize the coup. And those gangs were actually killing brothers and sisters on the ground in Haiti, people who are street vendors, who were people they identified as Lavalas. And what we are seeing today is an intensification of this campaign of terror that has been unleashed, that was unleashed 20 years ago, has continued, and right now it is exploding, where much of Port-au-Prince is being engulfed by this daily scenes of terror and atrocities being committed by those so-called gangs. These are not gangs. These are actually death squads affiliated with the Haitian government. And this is according, it's not just me saying it, this is according to United Nations reports from various human rights organizations in Haiti, and reports from the victims themselves who have identified these so-called gangs as being outlaws or criminals who have been weaponized to unleash a campaign of terror against the population. And the goal of it is there are several goals, but the two main goals are one, to repress the population, because conditions are terrible. With the coup that happened in Haiti, a lot of the social programs were actually eliminated, and people are not going to stand by and see the subsidies they used to get for their schools, subsidies on gasoline to keep the price affordable, the investment in education, investment in healthcare, to see all of that being taken away. Even the money that used to be provided for people who needed assistance, something similar to Social Security, was also taken away. And the corrupt officials were pocketing that money and living high off the hog. So people naturally took to the streets in rebellion, in protest. And those gangs, those weaponized criminals forming gangs with them, were set against the community to repress the community. There is another element also that needs to be brought out. And this is an element of Haiti has a lot of resources, natural resources. There's petroleum, natural gas, gold, copper, iridium, uranium, cobalt. And in many areas where those gangs, the area around Port-au-Prince and a number of places, where those so-called gangs, and I use the term simply because it's in the media, but it's more accurate to say death squads, government death squads, are operating, are areas that have been identified as being rich in these minerals. So there is an attempt to depopulate the area, to make people flee, and so that they can take over those lands, rather than sitting down, respecting the people, and work out some contracts, let's say, for companies that may want them. No, it's a matter of, just like Christopher Columbus did, wiping out the indigenous people in order to take over their land. So that's another big aspect of that. And that's the current situation we are seeing. And we are seeing these people, some of them are given a lot of praise in the media or being promoted in the media, in a sense, even though they say, well, they are gang members, but the way they present them as if they are revolutionaries is totally outrageous, because there is nothing revolutionary about these people who are killing children, killing women, men, raping women, burning people alive. The worst atrocities, Margaret, that you can think of is being done just to create a terror. And that's why you see so many of our brothers and sisters fleeing Haiti, ending up as refugees throughout the Caribbean and here on the borders between the U.S. and Mexico.
Pierre, who is this guy?
Yes, and it's a repeat again of the 2004 when the press had him as some kind of hero, promoting him all over the place. The man was actually an officer in the Haitian military. When the Haitian military was being disbanded, he had already been chosen, him and a couple of other officers, and a few of them, I believe it was 10 or 12, if I remember correctly, I may be wrong, but they were sent to receive training by the U.S. in Ecuador, at some kind of military school in Ecuador, that the U.S. is a big part of providing the training there. And so when he returned to Haiti, he was automatically placed on the new police force after President Aristide disbanded the military for their involvement in drug trafficking and torture and mass rapes and gang rapes and what have you. So, and Guy Philippe was assigned to the palace, but then he said, according to a journalist, Luc Dorange, who you had on your show, who knew him, he wanted to be a precinct commander. Why? Because he told Luc Dorange, I'm quoting from the show, that he wanted to make millions. He wanted to become a millionaire. And so he wanted to be a precinct commander. And as a precinct commander, he was charged actually by the Preval administration and others, the DEA, who said that they were involved, he and many of his cohorts who had received training and come back as precinct commanders, they were involved in drug trafficking, they were involved in prostitution rings, they were involved also in strong arming drug dealers and to recoup the money from them. They were involved in kidnappings and in organizing really a corrupt system of gang within the police and outside of the police. So you see this thing has an origin going way back. And that's Guy Philippe, according to someone who knew him, Luc Dorange, and who was on your show. Now, with barbecue, a similar thing.
Before we go on to barbecue, though, another thing about Guy Philippe, because at the time, and we'll be getting deeper into this with Jeb, who's listening and waiting to speak with us, that there was a crew in the Dominican Republic being trained by the CIA, okay? And from what I understand, either Guy Philippe, to be part of an helped to orchestrate the coup against the first democratically elected president of Haiti, Jean-Baptiste Aristide. And some of the reasons we have, I'll talk a bit more with Jeb about this, but we know that, among other things, President Aristide had raised the minimum wage. He had started a lot of programs that would benefit impoverished people. And he was also demanding restitution from France, because France had been extorting money since the 1800s from Haiti for the cost of the Haitian Revolution. If you would believe this, you know, they're getting reparations, right, for the loss of their enslaved labor. But Guy Philippe, or people he was connected with, they were part of that crew being trained in the Dominican Republic to then come in around or close to the historic anniversary of the Haitian Revolution, which was February 29th, a leap year, 20 years ago. So that's part of Guy. Did I get that right about Guy Philippe?
Absolutely correct. And another thing, he was the head of it. He was the nominal, the head of this movement. And this movement actually was very busy killing people, massacring communities, gang raping women, including a 14-year-old girl. There are photos of those of some of his victims in Cape Haitian, where they attacked he was accused of having put people in containers and drowning them in those containers. And there are so many that has been published in the media in several things. All this time, when the CIA was supporting him, all this time there was a warrant out for his arrest by the DEA. And all this time, during the time that the UN was actually in control of Haiti, occupying Haiti, Guy Philippe was roaming around with U.S., cavorting with U.S. troops and what have you. And he was there, and nobody despite the warrant for his arrest, he was still, and he ran for the Senate and everything. And so there was great collusion between him and the forces of the occupation from the U.S. and the United Nations. And a number of the soldiers or people he had with him, who had been people who were members of FRAP, had carried out a lot of massacres and what have you during the first coup d'etat, they knew about them, and these people were integrated in the police force of Haiti, not by the Haitian people, but they were integrated by the United States and United Nations forces. So you see, that occupation really injected not just the seeds, but they promoted the kind of terrorists that we are seeing today who are wreaking havoc on the population of Haiti.
Right, terrorism indeed. And Pierre, the thing about it is that he was so corrupt that at some point, you know, the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, you know, he wound up in prison in the U.S., and a number of us were very, very worried when, not that long ago, I think it was late last year sometime, he was released from prison and sent back to Haiti. And within a couple of weeks of Guy Philippe being on the ground in Haiti, he was running up and down the country with a lot of money and a lot of weapons. So as far as I'm concerned, he was sent back there to do a job. Okay, Pierre? So
that's the view of the Haitian population as well. The majority population feels that way.
Yes. So let us go on to this other thug, Barbecue, and tell us a bit about him.
Yes.
He's also all over the place. By the way, a lot of, as you mentioned, the left, even people on the fantastic show, Pacifica has a fantastic show called Democracy Now! They do a lot of really good work. But they have had people on that show promoting Barbecue as a revolutionary. And I've heard some of that taught among the left in the United States. Pierre.
Yes, nothing sickens the people of Haiti more than seeing this being expressed outside. Can you imagine the victims? This guy, Barbecue, his real name is Jimmy Cherizier, and his nickname is Barbecue. And what he's been, he also was a police officer who, in, I believe in 2017, was named in a massacre in a school that had taken place, was one of the officers involved in a massacre in a school in 2017, in which between 8 and 10 people or so, I don't have the figures fully in mind right now, were killed. And the people who were killed in these massacres were the teacher, the cook, the caretaker of the school, and folks like that who worked at the school. And so in 2018, that's when he became involved in the La Saline massacre. And the government had a warrant for his arrest. And this man was functioning, walking around as if there was no warrant for his arrest. He had a police escort. We saw him with many policemen. I saw a video of him with the police bringing him food, and he's directing them to give this house some food, to give that house some food as a PR. And this was put out there. And and since then, he's been involved in several massacres. He leads a federation of gangs known as the G9 Federation. And this G9 Federation was actually, according to various sources, it was including a government official who stated that the G9 Federation was put together by none other than the government of Jovenel Moïse. They brought them together. Even the Antonio Guterres, UN Secretary General, someone from his office was very aware of this and actually had words of praise for the G9 in October 2020 when they reported at the United Nations presentation that they made, and they said that with the G9 there, the rate of homicide in those communities is going down. At the same time, they were saying that the G9 was busy massacring people in the Bel Air community. When I say massacre, I mean that a lot of people were being killed, including this man who was disabled in his bed, and they set him on fire in his bed. There is also a 70-year-old grandma who was taken from a balcony and thrown down into the street, and she was saved by the population. So it's incredible atrocities like that have been completely documented, including the La Saline massacre report. And Margaret, I believe you have a video also about this, but there have been so many others. So this is the man, Jimmy Cherizier, nicknamed Barbecue. And several people have told me that the name Barbecue comes from his pleasure in burning people alive.
Right. And Pierre, when I was in La Saline, we were the Sojourner Truth team. We were the first international journalists who had been there. And people had warned us not to go in. It would be so dangerous, et cetera. But what I learned about that barbecue and the film, and I promised, post that film again called Massacres in La Saline, where people who survived that massacre and people who had family members who were killed described in great detail and identified Barbecue as the person orchestrating that massacre. And it is really disgusting now to see that Barbecue is running around. He's even quoted in this ABC News report that I recently spoke about, where he's, using this language like we Haitians have to decide who's going to head our country, what kind of government we want, and we're going to figure out how to get Haiti out of misery. But meanwhile, it is the most impoverished. What I'm hearing on the ground is the most impoverished people in Haiti that are really paying the highest price for these thugs that are running around trying to fool the international community as though they have the support of the masses of Haitian people and they have that clout. Pierre, I'm going to need to take a station break and bring Jeb Sprague into this conversation. But before doing that, Pierre, another thing that I was, not so shocked about is that this same Guy Philippe and Barbecue, along with another unsavory character called Moïse Jean-Charles, have now formed a collaboration, and they have proposed to the UN, to the United States and CARICOM that they be the ones in the leadership of Haiti, if you would believe this. Pierre, a quick comment on that.
Yes, quick comment. I believe it because the way that the people of Haiti view it, people in Haiti are not buying this. And people in Haiti say birds of a feather flock together. And so people have nothing but contempt for this trio of people who are so despicable that, you know, and people feel very strongly that only that it's a theater. It's a theater where they are being killed. And but the puppet master is the U.S. government. And they feel that these are characters, these are pawns of U.S. foreign policy being imposed on Haiti, which the people reject, and they are resisting very strongly against that.
Well, I think they have a very, very good point, because the United States are playing all sides, right? We know that even when I was in Haiti with Congresswoman Maxine Waters, we're going to hear a clip from her coming up next, at the U.S. Embassy, somebody slipped in my ear and said, we know it's not gangs, right? This was back then, Pierre, after I was in La Saline. So the United States, they know very well who's going on. And personally, I've had experience with, during the UN Women's Decade, of negotiating language about women and women's unwaged work with the Clinton administration, right? Meetings in the basement of the White House, only to get to the UN conference and find out that not only was the US not negotiating the language that was allegedly the agreed to language and the public language of what the United States said they were proposing, but they were negotiating the very opposite. Okay, so that was an important lesson. You know, they'll say one thing publicly and they're doing something else. And frankly, I have no doubt that they're behind this mess with Guy Philippe and Barbecue and Moïse Jean-Charles and their characters. But what we're going to do now, Pierre, is we're going to take a very short station break, and then we're going to bring Jeb Sprague into this conversation, because he has an incredible article called Secret Cable, CIA Orchestrated Haiti's 2004 coup. So we're going to be going to that next. We'll stay with us. We'll be right back.
7 feet barren, strange fruit, blood on the leaves. And blood at the roots. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. Pastoral scene of the gallant South. Them big bulging eyes and the twisted mouth. Scent of magnolia, clean and fresh.
Okay, and that was the late, great Nina Simone. I really wanted to play Strange Fruit here because that was describing the U.S. South. But when we look at what is happening today, we see really another version, almost an inversion of what is happening to the first Black Republic, the world's first Black Republic, Haiti, that led the way for the emancipation of the ending of slavery throughout the whole of the Americas. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning, for 90 days after that, you can go to kpfk.org and you'll be able to get the show. Also, if you go to SoundCloud, which is a free app, just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. You'll get the entire show. And we also want to welcome all of the Pacifica affiliates that carry Sojourner Truth. And we are having a 1 hour special where we're digging deep into what is behind the chaos. Never mind all the headlines that you're reading in the mainstream press, but what's really going on the ground. Our guest is Pierre Labossiere. He is still with us, a human rights campaigner, hails from the south of Haiti. But before I bring on our next guest, I would like to share with our audience this clip of Maxine Waters, Congresswoman Maxine Waters. After the 2004 coup, when President Aristide and his family were kidnapped and taken to the Central African Republic, right, I think hoping to disappear him, Congresswoman Maxine Waters got on a plane and went to the Central African Republic to basically save President Aristide and get him out of there. And here's what a report that she gave to a meeting, Pia, you were at that meeting in a church in Los Angeles a few years ago about her experience. Let's go to that clip now.
We know the history of Haiti. We know about Papa Doc. We know about Baby Doc. We know their relationship to some in the United States of America. We understand what Haiti has been through. We understand that President Aristide presented a new possibility. And I want to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, it's a miracle that he's alive today. It's a miracle. And we have to protect him. And even with our visit there, I did not want them to think that our visit with Lake Helene had anything to do with him. He knows how to manage himself and how to work out, you know, being safe and all of that. But I want to tell you that he has to be careful. We got us a plane and we went up to the Central African Republic. We were greeted by young folks on pickup trucks with AK-47s. And we just said, we just here to talk about President Aristide. They'd just been involved in a coup at the time. And so they took us to what was, I guess, the palace up there. And we waited and waited and waited until the new president came in. And of course, President Aristide, who is brilliant and speaks all of these languages, he was able to speak to them and talk with them about, you know, what was going on. And so I'll just tell you this whole story a little bit. They said, welcome. We have made a place for you to stay overnight. We will have a dinner for you. And I said, I can't stay. I got to go. You know, I said, I've got to go back to Washington, D.C.
And that was part of a clip of Maxine Waters. We don't have time to play the entire clip, but it she did succeed in bringing President Aristide and First Lady Mildred Aristide out of the South African Republic. I would now like to welcome to Sojourner Truth Jeb Sprague. He is a research associate at the University of California, Riverside. He's the author of Globalizing the Caribbean Political Economy, Social Change, and the Transnational Capitalist Class. He also wrote Paramilitarism and the Assault on Democracy in Haiti. That was published by Monthly Review Press in 2012. Jeb, it's been way too long, I think years, since you have been on Sojourner Truth. Welcome.
Hi, Margaret. It's great to be with you again.
Right. So, Jeb, well, for some people, an eye-opener, your article, for others, it just confirmed some of what we knew. But your article, published by The Gray Zone, basically lays out how the CIA orchestrated Haiti, the coup against President Aristide, and that it also had been years in planning. So, Jeff, just give us some highlights then from your article, what you were able to discover.
Yeah, my co-author actually had his Twitter account suspended around when we published this article. So the article looks at this real detailed cloak and dagger CIA operation in Haiti and their activities that really led up to the coup. You have to think about it in that historical context after September 11th with the rendition and torture programs, with the coup in Venezuela, attempted coup in 2002. And so our article, through these Freedom of Information Act documents that we were able to obtain that said do not distribute, we basically look in detail at this CIA operation in 2002. And I can talk more about that if you'd like.
Yeah. And this a name that keeps jumping out in your report, I did read it in great detail, is this Janice Elmore, who was in the U.S. Embassy in Port-au-Prince and a CIA operative, you say, and your article says, working undercover as a Department of State political officer. So, you know, that was a name that jumped out at me. Why? What role do you think this CIA operative played?
So, we did a deep dive on her. And so in our the FOIA documents we got, it basically showed how the State Department and the CIA were kind of playing like a game of good cop and bad cop, where, the U.S. ambassador was speaking with the Haitian government and, you know, causing them different difficulties and things. But the FOIA document, it basically shows how this woman, Janice Elmore, went into Go Naive the night before this infamous jailbreak and met with all these disloyal police officers and a man named Hugh Paris, who was a well-known coup plotter, had been working with Cedros all the way back into the 90s of the first coup. And so we basically show how, the CIA woman who had been involved in the Iran-Contra affair in El Salvador, where there's a lot of congressional evidence that we found about her role in Bosnia and Sudan. And a lot of these people, they're not like experts on Haiti. They're experts on hybrid warfare and these sorts of operations. So they work in different countries. And so the document we have shows her activities in Haiti and bringing about this jailbreak in which more than 100 men escaped from this jail in Go Naive. And many of the people that broke out of jail were ex-paramilitaries that had been put in jail as part of the Rabateau trial for the Rabateau massacre in 1994. And one thing a lot of people forget is when Aristide was in office, he carried out this, basically court trials and holding accountable these different paramilitary killers. And so these guys were broken out in 2002. And it's a very important piece of the puzzle about what happened, because if we look at, I think you already mentioned Guy Philippe and how he was hiding out in the Dominican Republic and carrying out these sort of cross-border raids, this Contra war against Haiti's government between 2001 and 2004. And then there was also the New York Times covered it in depth 15 years ago, where they looked at how USAID and the NED, right, which are these like CIA cutout aid agency groups, how they had worked to support all these political parties in the country and who were pushing them to be very confrontational with the government. And so now here's the third piece of the puzzle is creating this chaos in Go Naive, which is in the middle of the country. And so you really see how this CIA mission was to create divisions and chaos in the country to bring down a government in that post September 11th, real paranoid era where they were going after every government that they disagreed with in the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. And, you know, the thing about what you're saying, Jeb, you know, some people are still questioning whether in 2004 it was a U.S. backed coup or not. But in your article, you point out that in 2022, the former French ambassador to Haiti admitted that France and the U.S., in fact, orchestrated the coup. He acknowledged it, and that it was, he is saying, because of President Aristide demanding that the $21 billion in reparations that they had forcibly paid to France since 1825. I think those payments only stopped after World War II, and part of the reason that Haiti is so impoverished. So the French ambassador said, well, they thought if they got rid of Aristide, it would make their job easier, right? And undermine what the Haitians were demanding. But Jeb, in a few minutes we have left, you've mentioned Gonaïve a few times. And Gonaïve, interestingly enough, was also where the bicentennial celebration in 2004, January 1st, 2004, was held. And all hell broke loose. And you cover that in your article, and you quote Brian Concanen, who was on the ground then. So what happened in 2004 then? It seemed, you talked about this jailbreak. You talked about the massacre that happened. By the way, the massacre happened to be supporters of President Aristide. So this plan then began way before 2004, but the chaos then that happened at 2004 was a direct result of this planning. And this woman whose name you mentioned, this Janice Elmore, was up to her eyeballs in. Jeb, final thoughts on all this.
Yeah, a quote from Fabiola Cordova of the National Endowment for Democracy in the early 2000s. She said that Aristide really had 70% of the popular support, and then the 120 other parties had the 30% split in 120 different ways. And so really then in that period, they were looking for a new equation, a new strategy for breaking the back of Haiti's popular movement and putting in a new reality into the country. And so, other Randall Robinson's Unbroken Agony, my book, Peter Hallward's Damning the Flood, there's been different studies looking at what happened in Haiti around that coup. This article looks then real detail at Gonaïve and the CIA. And so like you said, Gonaïve, that's where Haitian independence was launched in 1804. And then in 2004, at the bicentennial celebration, President Aristide was there. South Africa's President Thabo Mbeki, he went against the diktat of the Western embassies, and he traveled to Haiti and took part in that, which is interesting now because we see South Africa leading the charge right against the genocide in Palestine, and these paramilitaries and these thugs that had been broken out of jail played an important role in disrupting that bicentennial celebration and really amping up this regime change campaign. And the other fascinating thing, last thing I would point out, is the day our article came out on March 1st, the day after the anniversary of the 2004 coup, of the 20-year anniversary, on that exact same day that our article came out, Barbecue and the different armed groups in Port-au-Prince that he's allied with, and this Vive Ensemble group, they broke into Haiti's main jail in Port-au-Prince, and something like 4,000 prisoners were broken out of jail, creating a real giant new crisis in the country. So we see history really repeating.
Yeah, that's exactly what I thought of as I was reading your article. But Jeb, it really would be good to hear more voices like yours, MPL of Boissier, and others, Kevin Pina, a few other people, to be heard in mainstream press and not some of the people they've been promoting. But Jeb, where can people go to read your article? Really important article to read.
TheGrayZone.com. Yeah, the much maligned, most hated outlet by the U.S. intelligence agencies, maligned on Wikipedia, not allowed on Democracy Now. A really good outlet, TheGrayZone.com.
Right. And you also have a blog, right? What's your blog?
I have a blog, jebsprague.blogspot.com, but I haven't updated it for a few years.
Oh, I see. Okay. Well, get on it, Jeb. Get this article up there.
Yeah, you look at thegrayzone.com, you'll see it. Thanks.
Okay. Pierre, just, last word from you here, because as Jeb was saying, this does seem like history repeating itself. You heard Congresswoman Waters, her worry and concern for President Aristide, who's been quietly doing brilliant work with the UNIFA, the University of the Aristide Foundation, who just a couple of weeks ago had a graduation ceremony of close to 400 doctors, lawyers, nurses, agronomists, etc. But Pierre, it does seem to me as though the U.S. is playing all sides, the sides with the so-named gangs, what they're trying to do with CARICOM to put a black face on their policies, and CARICOM allegedly trying to maintain some kind of independence, even though that's very questionable. But it does seem as though this is a continuation of 2004, everything that has happened from 2004 up until now. And a gain for the U.S. is that they have to be in charge of Haiti, and they want anybody but Lavalas.
Yes.
Right? The popular movement.
Correct.
Yeah.
You are correct. Haitians have been remarking that there are tons of honest, competent, extraordinary men and women in Haiti who, when President Aristide was in office, who actually proved themselves because the country was changing. It was on a path of development. Corruption was being uprooted, and you mentioned several things that were being done. And so what the U.S. wants to impose on us are the likes of Michel Martelly, a misogynist individual, a guy who was a very corrupt individual, someone
We have like 30 seconds, Pierre.
Someone like Jovenel Moïse, also corrupt. And this current guy, Ariel Henry, who's also has proven himself to be quite a bloodthirsty fellow. And so people, I would encourage them to get more information on Haiti by going to HaitiSolidarity.net. This is our website, HaitiSolidarity.net, of the Haiti Action Committee, and also Haiti Action Committee on Facebook.
All righty. On that note, we're going to have to leave it there, but we're going to continue covering this story. Thank you, Jeb. Thank you, Pierre, for joining us. We're out of time. If you'd like a copy of today's show, contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230. I'd like to thank Jose Benavides for his production help with today's show. Please stay tuned for more programming on your local Pacifica station. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air with our now weekly broadcast next Tuesday. Y'all, please stay well and safe, and thank you for listening.